Good afternoon. The time is 1:35, and I would like to call this meeting of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee to order. We are in Belch Room 105 of the Thomas Stewart Office Building here in the nation's most beautiful capital city of Juneau, Alaska. Today is Friday, April 21st, 2023. Members present are Senator Bishop, Senator Gray Jackson, Senator Dunbar, and myself, Senator Bjork. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Please turn off or silence your cell phones. I would like to recognize and welcome our recording secretary, Juliana Singh, and our LAO moderator, Lisa Denny. Today, we have three items on our agenda. First, Senate Bill 89, age for tobacco, nicotine, e-cigarettes, and tax e-cigarettes. Up next, Senate Bill 123, license requirements for commercial drivers. And next, Senate Bill 73, Register Interior Designers. First up is Senate Bill 89. This is the fourth hearing on this bill. We first heard this bill on March 24th, and then we had an introduction of the bill and followed up meetings on March 31st as well as April 3rd. We took invited and public testimony. Here to present a brief recap of the bill, we have staff to Senate President Gary Stevens, Tim Lampkin. Mr. Lampkin, would you please join us at the table, state your name and affiliation for the record, and proceed with your recap of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. Thank you for hearing this bill so thoroughly. Before you is a version, currently version B of the bill. This would, overall summary, align state law with federal law for sales of tobacco products and e-cigarette products to age 21. Primarily, it would also establish a 25% retail sales tax on e-cigarette products. That's, Mr. Chairman, the overall summary of this bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lampkin. Members present have a proposed draft, committee substitutes, and two amendments in their packets. Senator Gray Jackson, may I have a moment? Motion, please.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. I move CS Senate Bill 89, Work Order 33-LS0247/S as the working document. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Object for your purpose of discussion.
I'll object, along with Senator Dunbar, for purposes of explanation. My Chief of Staff, Conrad Jackson, will explain changes made by the CS.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Good afternoon. My name is Conrad Jackson, staff to Senator Bjorkman. CS version backslash S as in Sierra makes a number of changes in consultation with stakeholders, listening to public comment, listening to questions from the members. The following changes are made in the CS. Starting on page 3, lines 17 through 19, we're adjusting the violation, the fine for underage possession from $300, I apologize, to $150. Also establishing that a court may offer in lieu of payment a educational program explaining the risks of tobacco use. The second change is on page 9, line 30, where we are specifying that the 25% tax is on the retail sales price of the product. Change number 3 is on page 10, lines 19 through 20, and we add the definition of hemp products to the bill. Change number 4 is on page 12, line 2, and we are deleting from version B a subsection on tax credits and refunds as they apply to a wholesale tax structure. This bill deals with a retail tax structure. The next change, change number 5, is on page 12, lines 17 through 19, and we're adding an allowance for tax proceeds to be used for relief of schools in contracting with health advocates, reducing smoking, or conducting smoking cessation seminars, and for installation of vaping detection devices. The next change, change 6, is on page 14, line 23. And in that change, we're increasing the limit of nicotine concentration from 20 milligrams per milliliter to 60 milligrams per milliliter. Change 7 is on page 16, line 18, under the definition of retailers. We're adding the term selling. So we're establishing that people are selling the electronic smoking devices at retail. From there, change 8 is on page 21, line 25. And we're moving the effective date from July 1 of 2023 to January 1 of 2024. This also results in the deletion of sections 2 and 10 from the previous version. And this is just a technical change. And Mr. Chairman, that's the summary of changes for the S version of the bill.
Thank you. Are there questions for Mr. Jackson or Mr. Lampkins? Seeing none, I remove my objection. Is there further objection to the CS? Seeing and hearing none, CS for Senate Bill 89 version /S is before the committee as the working document. Senator Dunbar, you have submitted an amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move Dunbar Amendment 1, labeled Bravo 1, in your packet.
And I will object for purpose of explanation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I believe this is to the – no, actually, this amendment was drafted to the older version. So I think we'd have to ask for legal to make conforming changes. But the substance of the amendment allows 19 and 20-year-olds to continue working in establishments that sell vaping products and tobacco products. This is an issue we came across in Anchorage when we passed a similar ordinance, and I fought for it there, and I'll fight for it now. I agree with the intent of the sponsor of this legislation that we want to reduce overall consumption of these products, and I think that the tax is part of that, particularly among young people. However, this is a state and a country where people are expected to work at 19 and 20. I know that I think everyone on this committee probably did. I was expected to move out of my parents' home at 18, and that's pretty common. And I don't like restricting the employment options of young people. That's particularly those that work in places like grocery stores, which where I worked when I was 18, 19, gas stations where I worked when I was 15, although I'm not suggesting that we didn't sell anything, so I'm not suggesting that that's appropriate. I think some of the justification for why we are preventing 19 and 20-year-olds from selling these products is there's a expectation of diversion. And I would argue that a 20-year-old is not more likely, significantly more likely to divert these products to their underage friends as a 21-year-old or a 22-year-old. And for that reason, this amendment deletes the references to raising the age to 21 and keeps it for 19 for the purpose of selling. Now, crucially, it doesn't mean that they can possess except in the act of selling. And there are still the enforcement mechanisms for selling to underage, which are obviously being fired, and the establishment is still fined and heavily fined for selling to underage folks. But I think that we do not want to be limiting the employment options for people that are 19 or 20, and for that reason, I urge adoption of this amendment. I should say also one last point. The original bill did have a grandfather clause for people that are currently working that are 19 and 20. This goes a step further and says into the future, 19, 20-year-olds will be able to continue working at gas stations, grocery stores, other places that happen to sell these tobacco products or these nicotine-containing products. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dunbar. I will remove my objection to the amendment. Is there further objection?
I just have a question. for the maker of the amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When you were noodling this in Anchorage on the assembly, did you get any needs analysis done on how many 19-year-olds were out there in this space, operating in this space?
No, Senator Bishop, we were not able to get that data. I will say just anecdotally, I had a person reach out to me who was 19 or 20 that said, I'm about to lose my job unless you make this amendment. That was just one person, but they heard about the ordinance going forward. I think we're in this interesting conundrum where these are the kind of jobs that we expect young people to take. That is, they aren't the highest paying jobs in the world at some of these establishments, but they're the kind of jobs that young people usually have open to them. And, they don't typically require college education, for example, or to be a journeyman, or something like that. And so these entry-level positions are the kind that I don't think we should restrict from young people. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really appreciate Senator Dunbar's amendment and respect it, and I also understand it. But my question is, how does the sponsor of the bill feel about the proposed amendment? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Gray Jackson.
Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. First and foremost, Senator Stevens wants to see forward progress on the bill. Meanwhile, I'm compelled to point out that there's controlled access provisions currently in state law. It's called casually the behind-the-counter statutes as regards sales. If you go to a grocery store, Senator Dunbar referenced grocery store a number of times, if you can imagine, say, IGA downtown or Fred Meyer, any Fred Meyer, there's controlled access to tobacco products such that when a person wants to purchase tobacco or chew or an e-cigarette perhaps, if the clerk that's at the checkout stand is under 21, they have to go to the self-serve or the customer service counter to key the cage to access the products and bring it back. So at least in the instance of a grocery store, certainly at a liquor store, it doesn't preclude an underage person from having employment at these establishments. It just requires that there be an overage 21-year-old supervisor of some kind also present at the facility to facilitate the transaction.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Gray Jackson. Are there further questions or objections to this amendment? Seeing none, amendment labeled B.1 is adopted. Members have another amendment in their packets. Senator Gray Jackson, may I have a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On your behalf, I move amendment S.1.
I will object for purposes of explanation. Much to the point that Senator Dunbar just made about his amendment to have the age to be able to sell these products at 19, I would argue that we should have the age of availability to sell these products at the age of 18 for much the same reasons. My first job was in a very small grocery store. And as a college student, my freshman year of college, I was 18. I was precluded from working all the hours that I would have worked because of the need to have an older person on site and available to sell when I was younger. And if we are going to have people out working, certainly college-age folks that have graduated high school, I think that they should be able to take these positions and to do the work. It still would be illegal and come with very harsh punishments if those people were to buy or sell or possess these products against the law. But I don't think we should prevent adults, 18-year-olds, from going to work in these establishments and working the hours that they need to in order to fulfill their economic needs. So for that reason, I'm speaking to this amendment to change the age that these folks will be able to work and go to work to do their job in an establishment to 18 instead of 19. With that, I'll remove my objection. Is there further objection to this amendment?
I will object for the purposes of further discussion.
Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So to the maker of the, or I'm sorry, the presenter on the original underlying bill, what is the status of the law now? That is to say, is there a difference between 18 and 19 year olds now? And if so, would this amendment cause the bill to sort of roll back existing law as opposed, you know, with reference to tobacco products? That's, I guess, a question for Mr. Lampkin.
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, thank you for that question. This subject matter has a long and sordid history. Currently, Alaska state law is 19, and it has been 19 for decades, at least the 80s. I haven't researched specifically how long it's been on the books, but for quite some time. And what history, though, that I did find is that this policy decision orbited around the idea that we have 18-year-olds that are still in school. And so I would offer you the point or the notion that if we are targeting kids that are in our school system and young adults, young sub-adults that have social circles that include 15, 16, 17, 18-year-olds, it can make it easier for those that are under 18 to access the products. Therein lies, I think, the core question here is if we're trying to support, quote, adults at 18, or if we're trying to protect children that are under 18.
May I have a follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is not a question, but a statement, and I think I'm going to maintain my objection to your amendment. And I could see how, well, it's sort of funny. It's the, you get very into the finer points of the law, and I appreciate you and others supporting my prior amendment that allowed 19 and 20 year olds to remain in this profession, or these professions, I should say. But I am sort of moved by Mr. Lampkin's arguments with regards to 18 year olds. And again, this is a really challenging area, and folks there are sort of in a legal and societal kind of liminal space where at 18, you are expected, actually 17, to register for the Selective Service. And at 18, we can put a gun in your hands and send you to war. But it's also the case that many 18-year-olds are in our high schools still. There are some 19-year-olds that are going to high school as well, but far fewer. And so for that reason, and because I do want this bill to be overall moving in sort of the what I consider to be a positive direction of discouraging nicotine addiction and tobacco products use. An amendment to keep it at 19 and 20 is sort of neutral. An amendment to go to 18 is a little bit in the opposite direction. And for that reason, I will maintain my objection. And if necessary, I suppose we'll have a roll call vote on the amendment.
Thank you, Senator Dunbar. Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for bringing forward your proposed amendment. I was a co-sponsor on this bill last year, and I'm a co-sponsor on this bill this year. And so with that said, Mr. Lampkin, I really appreciate your reminding me and all of us of one of the reasons why this bill is being brought forward in the first place. With that said, I will be opposing this bill with due respect, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Ray Jackson. Senator Bishop.
Briefities.
Back on the record, 1:55 p.m. here in Senate Labor and Commerce. Is there further discussion on amendment number 2?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to correct a statement that I made before we went on a brief at ease. And I said that I was opposed to the bill, which I'm certainly not opposed to the bill, but I am opposed to the amendment Chair Borkman is proposing. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Reed Jackson. Further discussion on Amendment S1. Just a final comment on this amendment before we wrap up. Certainly do appreciate the ability of us to discourage teens from vaping, discouraging teens from taking up e-cigarette use. However, what I don't want to discourage folks from doing when they are able-bodied adults, high school graduates at the age of 18, is I don't want them to be discouraged from working. And we have a very long history in our country of valuing economic freedom, of opportunity, and the ability to go out and work to earn your keep in this country is very important to many people. And as we do that, we recognize that with freedom comes responsibility, and that people have a responsibility to make good choices and to choose to follow the law when where that we should. And having age limits that are above the age of adulthood for people to go to work and work as many hours as they would like to in a mom-and-pop grocery store, I don't find as being in keeping with that American spirit of liberty and freedom. And as we look at regulations and restrictions like this, we will see other proposals, just like this one. As we look at people who are trying to gain employees to serve alcohol or to simply wait on tables at fundraisers and other events, we need people that are willing to do the work. And as we continue to restrict people in our economy from going to work, we can fully expect that less people will be willing to do so.
Mr. Chair.
I'd like Senator Gray Jackson. Or I'm sorry, Senator Dunbar.
I wish. I wish I had that kind of experience as Senator Gray Jackson. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate those comments. I wanted to add, perhaps inadvertently, you stated something during that discussion that I thought was interesting. You said high school graduates at 18. And I would suggest if this amendment does not pass, that might be a compromise that is looked to either on the floor or in the other body or at another, a next committee, where an 18-year-old that has graduated high school is able to do this, but not one who hasn't. And I could see how that might seem like an arbitrary distinction, but because the motivation is to keep these products out of school, and I certainly know once I graduated high school, I don't know if I ever step foot in that building again, maybe significantly later, but that might be a compromise to look forward if this amendment does not pass. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Bishop.
I don't disagree with anybody's comments, but I do want to see the bill be effective and work. With Senator Dunbar's last comments, that he brings up a point that that makes a lot of sense, and something that I've thought about here just on this conversation. An 18-year-old that's still in high school, in my opinion, I know it's been a while since I've been in high school, but there's going to be some peer pressure, in my opinion, with some of his classmates. And so I just put that out there as a this bill has another committee of referral, so I just put that there on the record.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really appreciate your comments, and also the comments from Senator Dunbar when you talked about young people working in these establishments. But here's the good news. These establishments aren't the only place young people can work. I worked for New Jersey Bell Telephone when I was 16 years old, still in high school, in a typing pool. My son worked for Burger King. So there are truly other places where our young people can find work, and I feel comfortable about that fact. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Senator Gray Jackson. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, I will withdraw Amendment S1. Is there further objection to the committee substitute and the underlying bill, Senate Bill 89? What are the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to report CS for Senate Bill 89, work order number 33-LS0247/S as amended from the committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. I further move, Mr. Chairman, that we grant legislative legal authorization to make technical and conforming changes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there objection? Seeing and hearing none, committee substitute for Senate Bill 89 as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note moves from committee. Have a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork and set up for the next bill. We're back on the record at 2:05 p.m. here in Beltroom 105 of the Thomas Stewart Building. Next up is Senate Bill 123, License Requirements for Commercial Drivers. The bill sponsor, Senator James Kaufman, is away from the building on other state business, but is joining us via the Teams Hub to present the bill. Also on Teams is staff to the Senate Transportation Committee, Emma Torkelson. Senator, please put yourself on the record and begin your presentation of the bill.
Thank you. For the record, this is Senator James Kaufman, Senate District F in Anchorage. And thank you to the chair and the committee for hearing this bill and also for letting me come in and testify online. I certainly appreciate it. So So, if you will, I have, I'm not going to read the sponsor statement verbatim, but I do have some essential points that I'll run through. Senate Bill 123 repeals the state requirement that applicants for a commercial driver's license, or otherwise known as a CDL, must hold a regular Alaska driver's license for at least 1 year before they can apply for a CDL. This requirement, originally enacted in 1985, when the process for getting a CDL had way fewer requirements. Then in February 2022, in addition to state requirements, federal regulators mandated entry-level driver training for all CDL applicants. Now, a driver must pass written and physical tests to obtain their commercial learner's permit. With their permit, they then complete entry-level driving training, or ELDT, may use that acronym in the future, which involves significant theory and testing components of driving and a driving evaluation. Once they finish ELDT, they must pass a road test required by the DMV, at which point they are issued a CDL. So this process usually takes at least a month, if not longer, to complete, and ensures that an applicant is actually ready to safely drive commercial vehicles. So under current statute, we have a roadblock. Prospective truck drivers cannot get their commercial learner's permit or do any of the federally mandated training with that permit unless they've had a regular license for a year. So for individuals coming in from rural communities or anywhere else where they're perhaps constrained from getting much driving experience, they can't get the training until they've had that license for a year. So the Alaska Trucking Association estimates that Alaska is about 500 truck drivers short, and which presents a risk to any industry that relies on trucking. So I want to thank the committee and my staffer, Emma Torkelson, is also available and available to go through the sectional of the committee, so wills it. And I'm sorry, I'm getting a little echo, so it's a bit distracting.
No problem, Senator Kaufman. Apologies for the echo. We don't have anything on our end, but you sound great. Are there questions for Senator Kaufman? Senator Dunbar.
I'm sorry, more question for you, Mr. Chair. Do we have invited testimony on this as well?
Yes, we do.
Okay, I'll hold my question until after the invited testimony. Thank you.
Very good. Ms. Torkelson, could you please put yourself on the record and begin the sectional analysis of the bill?
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me all right?
We can. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. For the record, Emma Torkelson, staff to Senator Kaufman and the Senate Transportation Committee. Section 1 of the bill amends AS 2833-100A to remove subsection 2, which requires an applicant for a commercial driver's license to have held a regular driver's license for at least 1 year before the before beginning the CDL process. Then section 2 sets a January 20th, 2024 effective date. I would like to note, just for clarity, that if the bill passed, then a CDL applicant would still have to be 18 years old for an intrastate commerce, 21 years old for interstate commerce. They'll need to successfully complete all the required driving, written, and physical examinations on the state and federal levels. They'll not be able to have a driver's license from another state, and then they must be domiciled in Alaska. I would also like to note that if this bill passes, federal law will still require a CDL applicant to have a regular driver's license before they get their commercial learner's permit. The only change is that we're removing the state requirement for them to have that license for a year. And then one other clarification, a person can have any American driver's license for a year to qualify for that subsection this bill would remove. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Torkelson. Are there questions from members of the committee? Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and for Senator Kaufman, but also perhaps Torkelson, if you want to answer, why set the effective date that far out? Why not make it immediate? I mean, this might come up in our invited testimony, but my understanding is part of the motivation for this bill is because we have an influx of qualified refugees who have CDLs back or the equivalent back in their home country, and they are being prevented from working, and we have a sort of influx of people, particularly from Ukraine. So why not set the effective date sooner?
So I will hand that off to Ms. Torkelson.
Thank you, Senator Kaufman. Through the chair to Senator Dunbar, this bill has a House companion bill. So we initially modeled it the same language off the House version. We agreed that we'd actually prefer to see the effective date happen earlier than January 20th, 2024. So if it's the will of the committee, then we'd happily make that change.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Dunbar. Other questions from members of the committee? We have a couple of invited testifiers online to testify for Senate Bill 123. First up is Joel Michael, Executive Director. Michelle? Joel Michelle, Executive Director of the Alaska Trucking Association. Mr. Michelle,
thank you
for joining us.
Thank you. My name is Joe Michelle with the Alaska Trucking Association. Sound check?
We can hear you.
Okay. The Alaska Trucking Association fully supports SB 123, an act related to commercial motor vehicle driver's license requirements. It'll eliminate one of the many barriers to entry that people have when they try to begin a career in the trucking and transportation industry. In February 2022, the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration implemented its entry-level driver training program and established the minimum training requirements for entry-level commercial motor vehicle operators. This program came from years of engagement with safety organizations, industry, and other stakeholders. ELTD provides a checklist of well over 100 different skill, inspection, and knowledge requirements that applicants must prove proficient in before they are allowed to test for a CDL. And in light of seeing what ELVT is, we felt that the year requirement was a little bit redundant. Just as the regulators of the trucking industry, you know, you have commercial motor vehicle enforcement, you have the federal highways, you have FMCSA, but one of the biggest regulators of trucking in Alaska are insurance companies, and your safer scores and your safety record dictates really whether you can operate on the roads or not. And before a potential truck driver goes on Alaskan roads, they'll be tested once to obtain a normal driver's license. Their skills will be tested a second time during the ELD process by a registered training provider. Their skills will be tested a third time by the DMV when they take their CDL test. And finally, and this is what I'm talking to about insurance, before any company lets a new driver behind the wheel their $150,000 asset, they're going to make sure that that potential applicant knows how to drive. So with all those checkpoints, AT is confident that SB 123 would allow the industry access to a larger workforce and make it more convenient for people that are making their homes here in Alaska to pursue their profession that they chose in the previous country. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Michelle. Are there questions from members of the committee? Seeing none, up next for invited testimony is Joey Crum, CEO of the Northern Industrial Training Organization. Mr. Crum, welcome.
Hi, good afternoon. Do a quick sound check.
We can hear you.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Joey Crum, and I'm the president and CEO of Northern Industrial Training, commonly referred to as NIT. At NIT, we're workforce specialists. We train people so they can go to work. That means we work with employers and communities to determine what is upcoming and then help put plans in place to get a local workforce ready. One of our strongest programs is training and preparing people to drive commercial vehicles. People from all over the state come to our facilities in Palmer or Fairbanks to attend our programs, but we also train drivers statewide in many locations, including in Juneau in partnership with Clink and Haida in places like Kotzebue and Yukiak. When you see as many people as we do, you see the patterns that surround them. We see the patterns in the flow of people trying to determine what it is they want to do as a career and then selecting the pathways to get them towards their goal. But also in that flow, you see barriers, and they really stand out, like a big boulder in a stream damming the most efficient path of water. That's a good way to look at this bill. SB 123 removes a barrier that allows for more efficient training flow. We see a lot of young people who are interested in jobs that require CDL, but in our current statute, they lose interest and do something else. Now, passing this bill isn't going to register on the Richter scale, but it is a very important part of the process in removing barriers to entry, and especially allowing those that are the most adversely affected, like people in rural Alaska, choose this career path. The new regulations passed a year ago, February 7th, 2022, as we've heard from our previous speakers, the entry-level driver training standards, they really render the current statute moot. So the process to get a CDL now requires a person to pass a DMV written exams and a DOT physical to be issued a commercial learner's permit. After the permit is issued, they have to pass written exams proctored by a federally registered training provider, pass additional practical exams by a registered training provider, and then pass a performance test either by a DMV or one of their approved third parties. There are many levels of performance, both knowledge and practical, baked into the process of getting a CDL now. It is also important to note that vehicles such as 16-passenger vans or pickups hauling hazmat, which, for example, a 120-gallon diesel tank in the bed of a pickup is hazmat, those vehicles require CDLs. We need to pass this bill to remove unnecessary barriers that keep people from gainful employment. I'll stop there, Mr. Chairman, but I'll be happy to remain on the line.
Thank you very much, Mr. Crum. Are there questions from members of the committee? Seeing none, that is all of the invited testifiers that I see available online. If we have any more, we will come back to them in a little while. At this time, I will open public testimony on Senate Bill 123. Is there anyone in the room who wishes to testify? Is there anyone online who wishes to testify to Senate Bill 123? Take a brief at ease. Back on the record, 220 at Belts Room 105 of the Thomas Stewart Office Building. As we are still under public testimony, we seem to have some issues with our phone lines currently. So if folks have public testimony as it relates to Senate Bill 123, if you could please email the committee your public testimony or comments, please send your emailed comments to slac@akleg.gov. Once more, that email address for your public comments on Senate Bill 123 is slac@akleg.gov. At this time, we will close public testimony. And I would like to set an amendment deadline for this bill at 5 p.m. Tuesday of next week. We'll set aside Senate Bill 123 and take a brief at ease while we set up for the next bill. back on the record, 228. Next up is Senate Bill 73, Registered Interior Designers. We first heard this bill last week when we had an introduction of the bill and took invited testimony and opened public testimony. Today, staff to Senator Clayman, Brianna Kokarik, is here to give a recap of the bill. Brianna, if you could please state your name and affiliation for the record and give a recap of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and the committee for hearing this bill. For the record, my name is Brianna Kokarik. I'm staff to Senator Matt Clayman. Before you, we have a CS for Senate Bill number 73, work draft version U. So I'm going to be going over the summary of changes. This legislation was amended to include changes requested by the American Society of Interior Designers and American Institute of Architects Working Group. The working group was formed for collaborative work between interior designers and architects on Senate Bill 73. During the last working group meeting, the architects and interior designers came to consensus agreement on amendments for Senate Bill 73. Version U of Senate Bill 73 incorporates these as agreed upon by the working group.
Yeah, 1 second. Okay. Thank you very much for that great beginning. Before we jump in on the CS, we will need a motion to bring the CS before us. Senator Gray Jackson, may I have a motion, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the committee substitute as the working document for the committee. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. I'll object for purposes of explanation. Please continue, Ms. McCarrick.
Through the chair, thank you. I apologize. So going back into some of the summary of changes, all the language related to changing the name of the board from the State Board of Registration for Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors to the State Board of Registration for Design Professionals removed. Senate Bill 73 will no longer change the name of the board. Transitional language was added to include a voting board member seat for an interior designer on the AELS board for the period before the legislation's registration requirement is implemented. The interior designer board member must be an Alaska resident for at least 3 years immediately preceding their appointment, and they must be certified by the National Council for Interior Design Qualification. The word registered was included before interior design and interior designer for specificity throughout the bill, with a few exceptions. Restrictions that limited the scope of practice of interior designers were removed for services that do not change or affect the structural system or the safety of the building, or that do not affect public health, safety, or welfare. New definitions of the practice of registered interior design were aligned to existing definitions of other professional design disciplines. That is my summary of changes. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Kokarik. Are there questions from members of the committee? Seeing none, I will maintain my objection to the CS so that members have a chance further to review it, as you just got it late yesterday. And the committee will take up this bill again on Monday, April 24th, when we meet once more. Together with Senate Bill 73, we will also take up House Bill 51, Senate Bill 94, and Senate Bill 108. Briefies. back on the record, 233. Apologies to everyone as we continue to have a bit of technological difficulty with our phone lines due to a power outage, but I've been informed that we may be live here with folks online that would like to give testimony today. So up first for testimony is Jessica Cederberg.
Good afternoon, Senators. My name is Jessica Cederberg, and I'm the President-elect for the American Institute of Architects Alaska Chapter. AIA Alaska has over 200 members statewide and the support of AIA National in opposing SB 73 and its companion bill, House Bill 159, for the following reasons. This CS for SB 73, we just found out about it this morning and haven't had an opportunity to review it. The amended bill was generated from a draft that was not completed with the working group. I am one of the members on the working group, and this was a collaborative process, but we only had one meeting when we were doing the revisions to SB 73. So short is, we're not done yet. We need more time. And I have to ask, like, what's the hurry to push this bill through when there could end up being a lot of unintended consequences? Let's get it right the first time. We want to ensure that people who currently practice interior design and that don't have NCIDQ qualifications and which are required in this bill can still practice interior design in the state of Alaska. Thank you for your time this afternoon.
Thank you, Ms. Cederberg. Next up, Elizabeth Johnson.
Hello, this is Elizabeth Johnson calling from Fairbanks, Alaska. I am a current member of the AELS board, but I do not speak for the board on this bill. I would like to comment specifically on the new bill's change to 0848011B, which is the who makes up the board. It adds one interior designer, but it no longer separates the electrical or mechanical engineering positions. I am a registered electrical engineer, and I can tell you that the board reviews drawings and works of design by profession to determine whether there's malpractice and all sorts of other issues. So not having a mechanical and electrical engineer as separate people when they represent almost 1,500 of our registrants is a problem. By contrast, we only have 600 architects, and they have two spots on the board. We only have 389 surveyors, and they have two spots on the board. We have 57 landscape architects in our state, and they have a dedicated spot on the board, and only half of those are registered Alaskans. The rest are out of state. So I believe that this change, while it is saving the state a little bit of money by no longer increasing the number of board members by two, it is diluting the ability of the board to enforce proper licensing behavior in our state, and perhaps it was removed because it doesn't have to do with interior design, but I think that change of separating the mechanical and electrical engineering position is quite important. I know SB 126, which is the AELS board, tried to solve this a different way by not adding a spot, but now that we're adding the interior designer spot and going between odd and even number of registered board positions, I think it's important to make the mechanical-electrical separation. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Johnson, for your testimony. I had a question about it. You said that it would the current bill decreases number of board members by two. Did I misunderstand that? Is it actually by one because they're merging two, or is there actually two board members are being reduced?
Through the chair, the existing bill prior to this today added, separated it, so there's one electrical engineer, one mechanical engineer, and one registered interior designer, which the original state prior to any of these bills was one electrical or mechanical, so it could be one of either flavor, and one registered interior designer was not in the original statute, so we originally only had a mechanical or an electrical, And after today's amendment, it's back to one electrical or mechanical engineer and an additional one board member for the new one interior designer, as opposed to two new board members in the prior version. Does that help?
Yes, that makes more sense. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Johnson.
Next up, Dana Nunn.
Can you hear me? This is Dana Nunn.
We can. Ms. Nunn, please begin your testimony.
Certainly. I am here on behalf of the American Society of Interior Designers. My name is Dana Nunn. I am in support of SB 73 and its amended state. Speaking directly to process, this has not been rushed. This is a process that began in 2017, and we've had two bills prior to this, ample opportunity for collaboration on this. It's only recently that we've been able to engage and get a foothold in that collaboration, and I'm really excited about the advances that we've made together. Items that were left to be discussed after the last working group meeting related to things that we needed alleged legal to weigh in on, and they have done that in the way of the temporary transitional language for the temporary rep. So I'm pleased to see that that was resolved. Interior design does directly impact building occupants' health, safety, and welfare, and there's a number of ways that we do that, and you can refer to my letter and my testimony from our last hearing for that exhaustive list. Additionally, the unregulated practice of interior design presents at least a moderate risk of public harm, and the involvement of other regulated design professionals or building codes and inspections may not be sufficient to mitigate those potential hazards to public health, safety, and welfare. That one discipline exists and is already allowed to practice independently within a scope of work that happens to include the subset that is the specific scope of work of interior designers should not preclude other completely qualified and credentialed individuals from also participating in the market in Alaska. That is obstructionist, and that is restraint of trade. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Nunn. There are questions from members of the committee. Seeing none, we'll move on to Matt Baruch, who is available for questions, but if he wishes to testify, that's fine too.
Thank you, Chair Bjorkman, members of the committee. My name is Matthew Baruch. I'm the Director of Government Affairs with the Council for Interior Design Qualification. CIDQ administers the three-part NCIDQ examination, which would be the prerequisite exam for registered interior designers in the state of Alaska. We support this bill because legal recognition of interior designers as design professionals is necessary to protect the public from incompetent practice, which the exam cannot do on its own without state oversight. And I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee might have about the exam. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions from members of the committee? Up next is Catherine Fritz.
Good afternoon. This is Catherine Fritz. I'm here in Juneau and got the power back on, so that's good. I serve as the chair of the Board of Registration of Architects, Engineers, Land Surveyors, and my comments today are brief in that we are just wanting to follow up on this new bill, the committee substitute for SB 73. Having just received it late this morning, we have not had a chance to review it. I personally did a quick review, and from what I can tell, the six issues of concern that the ALS board brought before you in February all still exist. We will be reviewing this in more detail. I don't have sufficient time to be able to allow public notice for a special board meeting prior to Monday's hearing because of the requirements for open meetings. So if the committee chooses to give this legislation a little bit more time, I can either schedule a special meeting, or we are already scheduled for a regular meeting on May 10th and 11th, and this is already in our agenda. So I appreciate the committee's efforts to wade through the differences of the two bills and to bring forward this topic. Just hope that we will have a little bit more time to deliberate and offer some meaningful comments that are more specific to those six issues we've already brought. Glad to answer any questions. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Questions from members of the committee? Up next, Ramona Schrimm-Schreiner.
Hi, this is Ramona Schrimm-Schreiner. Can you hear me?
We can.
Good afternoon, Senators. My name is Ramona Schrimm-Schreiner. I'm an architect here in Anchorage, working in Anchorage, Alaska. I'm calling to request the committee to postpone approving the bill with the committee substitute amendment. The architects working group, both the working groups, they just received this draft this morning, and our architects have not had a chance to go through the entire document and discuss it. I sincerely request the committee to postpone approving this bill. Senator, I just want to point out that our AIA Alaska chapter, we have an invited testimony, Ryan Morse, on waiting to be called in. I just wanted to make sure that you didn't miss him. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Schrimm-Schreiner. Up next, Paul Burriel.
Good afternoon, everybody. Can you hear me okay? Great, thank you. My name is Paul Burrell. I'm the owner of Envision Architecture and the principal architect of my firm in Anchorage. I'm also part of the AIA working group that's been corresponding and collaborating with the interior designers group. I wanted to call in with public testimony today to say that we are working towards providing support for this bill, but currently as amended, I am not showing support just based on timing. We need a little bit more time to continue to collaborate and discuss this bill with the interior designers and to make sure all the amendments that we feel is necessary to support the bill are incorporated. And so I'm just asking for more time on that. As mentioned already, the CES had come out this morning, and so having a little bit more time to look through the amended bill and to work with the interior designers group, I think would be worthwhile. And so that's all I needed to say today. Thank you, everybody, for your time.
Thank you very much. Up next on Teams, Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess this is a question for Mr. Burrell, but also if there's any other people who want to speak to this, how much time do you think is needed to go through this process and have this collaboration for Mr. Burrell, because he's before us, but if there's anybody in the future that is from this architect group, rather, that is asking for more time, a sense of how much time might be helpful. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes. Thank you, Senator Dunbar, for that question. And Ryan Morse, he's the chair of our working group. He could speak to this in more detail when he's on the call, but I could answer your question quickly. And I think timing really just comes down to us being able to report back to our AIA Alaska chapter board, and then for them to be able to have time to meet as a board and give their direction to us as the committee, as the working group committee to proceed with the discussions. I think, you know, we're probably talking about 1 to 2 weeks, I think, would be needed. But Ryan Morse, when he talks, I know he'll specifically talk about that item.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
Up next on Teams Hub, Ryan Morse.
Hi, good afternoon, committee. This is Ryan Morse. Thank you, Senator Brookman, and the rest of the senators on the committee for allowing me to speak today. I just want to quickly qualify myself, but I'm going to skip over a few elements that I would have included in invited testimony that have already been shared. I'm representing the AIA Alaska component of the working group, And I'm also the past president of the AIA Alaska chapter and the current strategic council member to the AIA national chapter, representing Alaska and the Marianas Islands. Both organizations, the chapter locally and the organization as a whole, which represents over 90,000 architects, oppose this bill as currently written, including the amendments that we have before us. And I want to just cut straight to the chase that, you know, we've talked about rushing on this a little bit. The introduction and read-in of the amendments was not accurate. And I just want to point everybody's attention to the new section 29 of the bill, section 28, which is includes the definition. That definition is not changed from the prior version. And that is one of the items that has been discussed as a consensus item from the working group. Both the senator who is sponsoring this bill, Senator Klayman, who attended that meeting, and the ASID attendees of that meeting, and AIA consented to changing that. And a revised version was written before that meeting, reviewed during that meeting, and approved, and it is not included in this bill. That is just one of many examples of why I don't think we should be rushing through this process and should be taking a close look at this bill and its implications, because I have a few more moments I'd also like to point to the transition plan that would, under the current definition, allow people that do not have any credentials to do the work that is defined in that definition, including changing firewalls and buildings for up to 2 years. So I think there is work to be done on the bill itself. So far, the process has been constructive. We've made a lot of progress, and some of that progress is in this bill. And I appreciate Senator Klayman's participation in our last meeting. I think it was very constructive, and I hope we can have another meeting soon. In terms of the question of time, it has been 3 weeks since that meeting. We now have a new bill as of today that represents a piece of the work that was done there, and another part of that meeting was agreement to have an additional meeting and discuss additional items. So it will take time, and I can't control that, nor can the AIA or Senator Klayman. It's going to take everybody to make time to get together and complete this process. So I don't want to make a commitment beyond the fact that AIA can say we don't agree with what is in paper today, and we are eager to continue the process because there is clear evidence of progress in this document. I really appreciate everyone's time. I encourage everyone to continue to ask questions of general contractors, of engineers, building owners, local governments, the AELS board, and of course, AIA Alaska and myself are available for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Morse. Are there questions from members of the committee? I have one. Mr. Morse, how long have the interior designers and their group been seeking registration and kind of engaged in conversations with your group, or this issue has been an outstanding issue? How long has this process been going on already?
Thank you for the question. I cannot say how long the overall process has gone. In other states, this has been an ongoing topic for upwards of 30 or more years, and the outcome in some of those states has been rolling back bills that look like the one we have before us today. In Alaska, I know it has been going on for some years, and this is not the first legislative cycle where we've seen bills like this. I myself have been involved in this process since about November of 2020, when I was in boarding to become the chapter president and becoming more familiar with this. So I've been involved with this for a few years, and in the time that I've been involved, we have continued to reach out and be willing to discuss this topic and help craft a bill that's mutually agreeable.
Very good. So years-long process. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Morse. And you might not be able to answer this question, but I thought I'd ask it anyway. In other parts of the country, has AIA or, you know, the other affiliates, have they been able to come to mutually agreeable bills where the interior designers are able to have this kind of registration process and be able to work independently, and the architecture association agrees to it?
Yes, thank you, Senator Dunbar, for that question. And the answer is absolutely yes. North Carolina, Wisconsin, and Illinois are three examples that the working group looked at closely that have had bills passed in the last few years that were the result of AIA chapters and other interior design organizations collaborating and agreeing on the bill. Those bills have some commonalities that have helped set the standard for how I can quickly review a bill like this that we just got today and say, it's not there yet. Once it looks like it's there, we do want to, of course, go back to our membership and make sure everybody is comfortable with it and we've carefully analyzed it. But there are definitely a few metrics by which those other bills have passed that this one doesn't. And so I'm optimistic that something can happen because we've seen it and we have examples of it. And we hope to continue to steer this bill in the direction of those kinds of results. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ross. Further questions from members of the committee? Hearing and seeing none, we will keep public testimony open. And once again, I'll maintain my objection to this CS and we'll set the bill aside. The Senate Labor and Commerce Committee will meet again on Monday, April 24th, when we will take up House Bill 51, Senate Bill 73, Senate Bill 94, and Senate Bill 108. As there is no further business to come before the committee, this meeting of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee is adjourned at 2:55 p.m.